Hello, everyone. Welcome to the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District's virtual Zoom meeting for November 4th, 2020. Amy, can we get a roll call, please?
Director Ray Russell.
Here.
Director Linda Austin.
Here.
Director Jeff Lee.
Here.
And will you silently say the pledge with me? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Under agenda review, is there anyone who would like to take things out of order this evening?
No.
Okay, well, with that, we will proceed as published. This takes us to item four. This is public comments on items not appearing on tonight's agenda. So this is the public's chance to talk to the Sanitation District Board about items within our jurisdiction, but that are not published tonight. And please keep your comments to 3 minutes or less. I will check with, I'm not sure if it's AGP or Amy tonight who's controlling this part.
Would you like me to be handling this?
Sure, that'd be great. Thank you.
So for the public, if you could use the raise hand function to indicate you would like to speak. If you are on a telephone, dial *9. Madam Chair, I'm not seeing anyone raising their hand.
Okay. With that, I will close public comment and we will move forward to item five. This is our consent agenda. We have two items on consent tonight, 5A, approval of warrants, and 5B, approval of meeting minutes of October 7th, 2020. Do either board members have any questions of staff on these two items or want to pull them for separate consideration?
I'm good.
Okay, then let's again go to the public and open up public comment and see if anyone has a comment on either of these two items.
I do not see any hands raised.
Okay, then I will close public comment and bring it back to the board for consideration.
I move that we approve the consent agenda as presented.
I will second that.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion?
Nope.
Amy, can we get a roll call, please?
Director Ray Russell?
Yes.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Lee?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. This takes us to item 6A. This is consideration of fiscal year 2020-2021 first quarter budget adjustments. And let's give this over to Mr. Gent.
Good evening, Jeremy Gent, District Administrator. The item before you is consideration of fiscal year 2021 first quarter budget. And you'll notice the title says budget adjustments. That should not say adjustments. We're not requesting any adjustments at this time. And with that, it's recommended that your board receive and file this report. And I will turn it over to our bookkeeper, Amy Simpson, where she has a PowerPoint presentation that she'll run you through the status of our quarter one budget review. Amy?
Good evening. I am going to now share my screen. Hopefully it works. Do you see my screen?
Yes.
All right. Okay. This is the first quarter budget review for fiscal year 2020-2021. Staff's recommendation is that the board receive and file tonight's report. This presentation provides staff's review to both revenues and expenditures. This quarter, no adjustments are being recommended. It should be noted that for fiscal year 2021, district revenues include substantial debt funding for the district's redundancy project. Until the district issues the debt in the second quarter, this revenue will remain absent. In order to best communicate current fiscal financial performance, this report describes revenues and expenditures both with and without the redundancy project revenues and expenses. At the end of the first quarter, overall district revenues are 5% or 23% collected if bond and USDA financing are not included. Since Fund 20 is anticipating receiving debt revenue in later quarters, total Fund 20 revenue is currently less than 1%. As previously stated, this low percentage is expected and is due to Fund 20 holding the redundancy budget. Fund 26 receives no direct revenue. Total revenue at first quarter is 5% collected, including future redundancy bond revenue, and is 23% collected when not including these anticipated debt revenues. Service charges and fees are 23% collected. Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, brine, and interest revenues are 25% collected. Currently, Oceano revenue is at 5% in the first quarter. Since the publishing of this staff report, Oceano revenue has increased to 16% collected. Revenues from rates and charges on the tax roll are largely received in the second and fourth quarters. Connection fees are 21% collected. Connection revenue is highly variable and fluctuates throughout the year. Interest revenue is 15% collected. This is an account that staff will be monitoring. Interest rates have decreased this year. Current interest rate for the county treasury is 1.43% and LAIF is 0.84%. Brine revenue is 23% collected. The bond and USDA funding is anticipated to be received later this fiscal year. A summary of expenditures by fund is detailed in this table. Total district expenditures at the end of the first quarter stand at $1,336,533, 5%, or 20% if the redundancy project is not accounted for. Total operating expenditures can be found in Fund 19. Total operating expenditures are at 20% or 26% in the first quarter. No changes are being recommended at this time. The next two slides show the breakdown of the two accounts exceeding 30% at first quarter. Employee benefits and other personnel cost, 39% at the first quarter. This high percentage is due to the annual payment of the unfunded liability, which is paid to CalPERS retirement. The unfunded liability is equal to the value of invested pension fund assets minus the present value of all future liabilities to pay pensions. This account is expected to level out by mid-year. Staff will continue to monitor this fund group. Straight-lined without the annual payment, the fund would be at 25%. Materials, services, and supplies are at 31%. Two of the 11 accounts that make up this fund are over 30% at the end of the first quarter. Employee uniforms was at 41%, which is due to the one-time boot allowance payment made in July. Plant chemicals are at 33%, which was a result of the primary clarifier number 2 being offline during the rehab project. This account is expected to level out in the coming quarters. Total other charges are at 15% for the first quarter. This fund includes the debt service that is budgeted in Fund 19 and the MOU with the City of Pismo. The debt service is at 0% and will begin in future quarters. The MOU with the City of Pismo is at 72%. This expense is tied to an agreement the district has with the City of Pismo Beach to fund 50% of the preparation of an environmental impact report for the Central Coast Blue Project up to $113,400. The expense is capped by the agreement and as such cannot exceed 100%. Capital outlay is at 5%. Fund 20 capital expansion is 1% expended with the redundancy project and 5% expended without the redundancy project. Capital expansion in Fund 20 is made up of the SCADA project and the redundancy project. Fund 26 capital replacement is 20% expended. The accounts in this fund are the trunk sewer maintenance, the structure grounds replacement, and the emergency repair. In conclusion, the district budget is right on target at the first quarter review. This report has shown that both revenues and expenses are at 5%, or 23% and 26% if we look at the report without the redundancy project. This concludes my report, and I am happy to answer any questions the board may have.
You're muted.
I was muted. Yeah.
Thank you. Rookie. Not a rookie. Let's start with Director Austin and see if she has any questions of staff.
No, I don't have any questions. I don't have any questions right now.
Director Lee.
So I just want to say thank you for the report and just ask one kind of overarching question, and it could be for Amy, could be for Jeremy, with regards to how has COVID impacted the budget from your sense so far? I mean, it looks like there hasn't been a significant impact, but has that kind of the proverbial pig already gone through the snake, or are we expecting impacts to come?
Yeah, so this is something we have been tracking, Director Lee. The district impact from COVID have been minimal at this point. Expenses have largely been centered around increased personal protective equipment, hand sanitizer, masks, gloves, those type of additional, which we always have, and we are at a facility that uses those regularly, but we are consuming more. And so we've estimated that at about maybe $3,000 that we've expended on increased sanitation. The other things we've done, we've had increased office cleaning. When we rotated staff, we would have a cleaning done, and we put wipes in the cars, pretty simple stuff. So not big expenses there. On the revenue side, the way we're structured is we're flat fee for our rates and charges. So the only disruption to revenues may be in the future from Lucia Mar School District, as the school district revenues have a special formula where they use average daily attendance and they pay their bill at the end of the year after the school year is over. So we won't know until late June. It's right at the end of the fiscal, so we hustle to capture that in the appropriate fiscal year. But in June, the school district will tell us what their average daily enrollment was. And if that's a low number, we could see the total school district revenues, $46,000 a year in revenue out of about $6 million in revenue that we, so that is the potential downside. If they, you know, I don't imagine that they would end up with a formula that shows zero. But it could be very close to that number. So you could say that 46,000 is the magnitude of, loss that we could see on the revenue side because of COVID. But other than that, we have not seen any loss of occupancy or loss of rates being collected here at the district.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Okay, and Amy, my only question is going back to the slide where you showed it's related to the unfunded liability line. And it said 120%. And my question is, what does that 120% represent? Does that represent that we didn't budget enough, or does it represent that we are intentionally overpaying to build down?
It represents that we did not budget enough.
Okay. So then in theory, maybe later on in the year, we'll have some kind of adjustment to make? Or is that just a single payment?
It was a single payment, and overall, employee benefits and other personnel costs that are included with that. I think some are lower, some are higher. So as a total fund, it would be at 25% if we had done the annual payment over the quarterly. If we had made the annual payment in quarterly payments instead, we would be right on track at 25%.
But to elaborate a little bit, if I may, we estimated what CalPERS was going to ask for at the beginning of the year for this unfunded liability. And we did estimate that low, but we have had other savings throughout that account, travel and training for the district. You know, there's no seminar, everything's canceled. And so we have substantial savings and low utilization of that budget. And so at this point, we're not asking to tie up more of the district's money. Those other accounts can make up that shortfall and likely will by the mid-year.
Got it. Thank you, both of you. And that's my only question. So let's go ahead and open up public comment and let's see if there's anybody in the queue who would like to speak.
I see nobody with their hand raised.
Give it a second to let them fumble in and do that. Okay, well then I'll go ahead and close public comment and bring this back to the board. This is a receive and file, so there is no action for us to take. So bear with me while I close my Zoom and open my my packet. And this takes us to item 6B. This is board confirmation of the execution, delivery, and sale of wastewater revenue certificates of participation, approving preliminary official statement, and approving related documents and actions. Again, to District Administrator Jen.
Good evening, Jeremy Gent, District Administrator. And the item before you is board confirmation of the execution, delivery, and sale of wastewater revenue certificates of participation, approving preliminary official statement, and approving related documents and actions. It's recommended that your board adopt resolution 2020-423, confirmation of the execution, delivery, and sale of wastewater revenue certificates of participation, approving the preliminary official statement, and approving the related documents and actions. The item before you, we have Alex Handler is here to speak on this item. He is our financial advisor through Bartle Wells when it comes to funding the redundancy project. In addition, our bond counsel is available for questions tonight for your board on this item. But I will turn it over to Alex here in a minute. But basically what's before you is approval for us to go out and begin the process of borrowing money. It's a lot like beginning the process of applying for a loan for a home. And so what your board is doing is giving the district the permission to start putting this stuff out on the street so that we can move forward with the bonds. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Handlers. And Alex, if it's the floor is yours.
Thank you. Yes, nice to see everybody. So as you recall, we were in front of the board on Zoom in August. At the August meeting, you approved resolutions that authorized the issuance of the wastewater revenue certificates of participation, which are like bonds, and you also did the authorizations for the USDA loan, and you adopted the form of the legal documents. There was two other documents that weren't adopted then because they weren't already, and it was a little too soon, too far away from the bond sale. So those are the two documents that are up for board approval tonight. One is a preliminary official statement, and that's kind of a lengthy document, but that's kind of a legally required offering document for the bonds. So in there, there's a lot of description. I call it the bonds or the certificates. There's a description of the certificates, what the legal security is. There's a rundown on the district, on its finances, its ability to repay the debt, its rates and charges, things along those lines, to give investors all the material information they need so that they can make an informed decision if they want to buy your debt and make sure that they're not don't have any important information that's been omitted in that as well. So it's legally, it has to be a complete document, and always the governing boards or the city councils have to adopt it as to form. Now, what's out there is a form of the preliminary official statement. It's not the final version. The final version will be completed after your construction bids come in. They're due to come in on November 10th, which will be a big day. And after that, we're going to do the final, we'll call it bond sizing, to figure out how much do you really need to get out of these this debt issuance in order to fund the project. And again, this debt issuance is going to do two things. There's two series in there. Series A is a long-term financing. It's going to be 30-year debt that'll be paid back over time for the project financing for the redundancy project. And there's also a Series B. What the Series B is for, that's the amount that's going to be refunded by the USDA loan. Because the USDA loan, I think, is probably no one remembers, but as we may have mentioned before, USDA doesn't give you the money up front for the project. They want you to spend the money first. And then when the project is complete, they'll come in and take out the interim financing. So that Series B has a shorter term repayment, and it has got very flexible repayment provisions so that as soon as your project is complete, you can accept the USDA funding, repay that portion of it, and then you'll be paying the USDA loan for the, the subsequent 40 years at a very low rate. Interest rates are very low right now, as folks know. Interest rates came way down close to all-time lows. They've ticked up a little bit, but I mean, they always go up and down a little bit. But that's just in the last month or two, there's been a flood of debt that was trying to hit the market before the election because of concern. So the volume of debt that hit the market was, double, triple what's normal. So there was just a huge supply that had to be absorbed. So interest rates went up a little bit. But we expect after, now that the election is over, that the supply of bonds and other debt's going to come back down again and restore balance. So the rates could fall a little bit more, but they're still extremely low. The other document that's up for board consideration is something called the notice of sale. And this is needed for any kind of competitive sale. It kind of details the terms of the sale and how the award would be made to the bidder with the lowest interest rates. I'm sorry for rambling on. I got two other things I want to mention on the side. One is we're trying to keep our options open here. So after the project bids come in, if they come in much higher than anticipated, we may have to come back on November 18th for additional board authorization to make sure the bond, the CO certificates can be issued in an adequate amount. We're hoping that's not the case, but it's a possibility. And the second thing is we're leaving the option open for doing a competitive sale or a negotiated sale are the two types of the ways that bonds and COPs get issued. We're planning on a competitive sale, but there are periodically times in the market where there's just not a lot of bids happening because there's, for example, the recent weeks with this massive flood of bonds hitting the market, all the underwriters were booked solid issuing, billions of dollars of debt. So there were some issues that didn't get any bids or maybe got only one bid. So if we see a bad bidding environment, we may want to switch over and do a negotiated sale and work with an underwriter. I don't think that's going to be the case. I'm just mentioning it in case we do come back at a later date and opt to do that. But it's right now, the schedule is set so that November 10th, you get your bids. Soon thereafter, we're going to finalize the preliminary official statement and the bond size. You'll have your audit to approve on November 18th. We should be getting a bond rating about then. And then have the POS hit the market for a competitive sale on December 3rd. We would get the bids in with the plan that we would close the financing. It typically takes about 2 weeks after the bonds are sold for a James Warziniak bond counsel. If you can pronounce his name, you would have won some a lot of points in Scrabble is what you can get with his name. it takes a couple of weeks. There's a lot of documents that have to be drafted reflecting all the numbers and circulated for signatures with the plan that the bonds would close on the morning of December 16th. And that is the day that there's a planned board meeting for awarding the contract. So you'd actually get the money in the bank in the morning, and then you could, comfortably award the construction bids in the evening. That's the plan. So the recommendation is approve the form of the preliminary official statement and the notice of sale. Again, Jeremy's authorized to sign on to any final changes. And I think everything seems to be in pretty good shape in the bond market right now. So we're hoping your construction bids come in favorably. And that concludes what I was going to cover. Any questions?
Director Lee, any questions? Director Austin, any questions?
I don't have any questions. Thank you very much for all the explanations.
Yes, and I would say the same, and I feel a little hamstrung in that I'm not an expert, and we're relying on the experts to tell us that we've done everything properly. So I do feel like we've had enough public discussion about this that I feel comfortable with it, but I do want to acknowledge that I'm a little out of my element on this one, which is why we have so many experts sitting here with us. So thank you for that. Let's go ahead and check in with Amy and see if, let's open up public comment and see if anyone has any questions on this item.
I see nobody raising their hand in public comment.
Okay, then we'll go ahead and close public comment and bring it back to the board for consideration and possible approval. And again, I'm gonna—
In light of what Board Chair Russell, Ray Russell just mentioned, we are relying upon the experts, and that's why we have experts. And I feel very comfortable in making a motion to adopt Resolution 2020-423, which is a confirmation of the execution, delivery, and sale of wastewater revenue certificates of participation, approving preliminary official statements, and approving related documents and actions.
Second.
Right. We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion?
No.
Okay, can we get a roll call, please?
Director Ray Russum?
Yes.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Lee?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay. Again, forwarding through my packet, forgive me. So item 6C is recommendation of award for the WWTP Redundancy Project Community Workforce Agreement Consulting Services Contract with Pacific Resources Services. Again, District Administrator Gent.
Good evening, Jeremy Gent, District Administrator. The item before you is a recommendation for award of a contract with a community workforce agreement for consulting services with Pacific Resource Services. It's recommended that your board authorize the district administrator to execute a contract for the community workforce agreement consulting services for wastewater treatment plant redundancy project with Pacific Resources Services in the amount of $79,828 and authorize the district administrator to review and approve changes to the contract for up to 15% of the initial amount or $11,974 for a total potential amount of $91,802. If you recall, in August of 2019, our board adopted the community workforce agreement, which requires local hire through the trade halls on the district's redundancy project. And as part of that agreement, the district needed to procure this community workforce coordinator that would fill the role of coordinating with the trades, the personnel that is coming onto and off of the project. And so the item before you is the result of an RFP that was conducted by the district with assistance from our contract project manager, MKN. And we asked questions and reviewed proposals based on organization and the clarity of the proposal. Project understanding in the proposed scope of work, experience with similar kinds of work, and the qualifications of the staff and availability of the consultant. The scope of the work includes monitoring compliance with the community workforce agreement, monitoring compliance with the local area requirement, assisting monitoring the payment of payroll and benefits, attend labor management meetings with the trades, reporting payroll, and handling any grievances that may occur in implementing the community workforce agreement. The proposed amount will be charged to the redundancy administration budget. And with that, it concludes my staff report, and I'm happy to answer any questions regarding the agreement.
Thank you very much. Let's see if there are questions. Director Austin, questions of?
I don't have any questions, pretty much.
Director Lee?
So thank you. I just had one question, and I'm sure it's in here somewhere, and I've just overlooked it, but just wanted to confirm with Jeremy that this agreement does cover the life of the project. it's not expected. It's for a certain number of months, and if the project goes longer, that we're going to have a change order.
This doesn't include coverage for a 30-month duration of the project. Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much for the clarification. That's all the questions I had.
And I have one question, Director Gent. So I'm going to page 12. Not sure what that 12 represents. It's the proposed scope of services chart. And I wanted to ask, it's my understanding that part of the advantage of the community workforce agreement is a reduction in grievances and stop orders and things like that. But I see that we have a significant amount that's budgeted for grievance resolutions. So I just wanted to kind of check in and see where that number comes from.
So one of the things that the coordinator, and it, from the district standpoint, you are correct. Yes, the grievances will not impact the district. And that's one of the advantages of these PLAs or community workforce agreements, is that happened. These type of grievances that are being referred to are largely centered around what's called, in the trade terms, a jurisdictional dispute. And what that term means is that the type of work might be contested between the two trades. So a labor union might say that they can put a pipe in the ground because a laborer can install pipe. I'm using an actual example that gets contested. So you have the local labor union saying, hey, I can put the pipe in the ground with the general labor. And you may have the steam and pipe fitters union saying, hey, we want that work. And that's called a jurisdictional dispute, and they may file a grievance. And the protections that we have is we don't have to deal with it. The community workforce coordinator will have to deal with it, and they can't stop work to sort it out. I mean, so that's the advantages of the community workforce agreement, is work continues and the grievance happens behind the scenes, but nothing stops it on site.
Got it. Okay. And then how did we come up with that number?
So what's before you is just an estimate on the number of grievances they might anticipate handling. I think that represents up to four grievances. So on these type of time and material contracts where they're handling all that stuff, they have to estimate, okay, how many of these things are we likely to encounter? And if there are more that eat into that 15% contingency. And if there's more than that, we could come back. And following the CWA at the city of SLO, they have had a dispute that was handled pretty quickly. I didn't inquire to the cost, but I don't think there's been numerous disputes on SLO's project in this category. And so I don't anticipate that being problematic for the district moving forward, but we did have to account for it in case we encountered it.
So if we didn't encounter that kind of estimated number, that would be a savings to the district.
Correct. That work would be non-performed. Yes.
Okay. Excellent. All right. Thank you for that. With that, I see a couple of raised hands. I've now opened up the participants thing, but I'm going to let Amy handle this. So, Amy, let's go ahead and open up public comment, and I'll let you handle that.
Okay, our first speaker is Eric Christen.
And Amy, you've got the timer ready to go?
Yes.
Okay. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hi, my name is Eric Christen. I'm the executive director of the Coalition for Fair Employment and Construction. We're a statewide organization that's been fighting project labor agreements for 22 years, or the euphemism that the unions used on yours, the community workforce agreement. We warned you when you implemented this discriminatory and wasteful agreement that it would cost you, and now you're paying that price. You'll pay a bigger price when the bids go out and you have reduced bidders because of the exclusionary provisions that are contained within the PLA, such as all workers having to pay into union health, welfare, and pension plans that they will not vest in, non-union companies not being allowed to use their workforce, non-union apprentices not being allowed to be used. your explicitly and implicitly discriminatory agreements that you signed on to with your project labor agreement, you'll pay for that when the bids go out. But tonight you're paying an additional cost to, as Mr. Gentz said, cover for the union's inefficiencies and arcane work rules that they promise not to have any of those, or if they do, this person that you're now paying an extra fee for will help resolve them. It's quite remarkable, actually. So you're paying a fee to give somebody a monopoly so that they in turn won't cost you any more money to resolve their arcane work rule or jurisdictional disputes. That's what you're doing here. And it's necessary to be pointed out because we told you this would cost you additional money, which it now is doing. If you had gone out with a free and competitive bid process, free of the discriminatory provisions that you've supported, such as the wage theft, which a non-union worker, if they had to pay into a union pension plan they didn't invest in, that money's lost to them. So the worker, the bidders, the non-union bidders will not be bidding your project because they will not subject their workers to those provisions and wage theft. So those workers and those contractors won't be bidding, but you're still going to be paying this extra $79,800 to $91,000 plus just to oversee the project labor agreement. So necessary to point out, this is going to continue to cost you. It was a terrible decision that did not have the public comment that was necessary to show you all sides. It was a placating the special needs of a special interest group that represents less than 15% of the construction workforce in California. So good luck, enjoy, and this is the first of what will probably be many costs associated with this project labor agreement. Thank you.
Our next speaker is Richard Markesum.
Good evening. I'm Richard Markesum with Pacific Advocacy Group, and by way of information, I have no relationship to Pacific Resources Services. I certainly agree with Mr. Kristen about the wasteful nature of your CWA, but I have another issue that I explained in an email that I sent to the board last week, and that is what I believe is the appearance of a conflict of interest between Chair Russum and making any decisions on this project. After the vote last year that included I votes from Chair Russum and Mayor Lee, when she was running for re-election on the city of Arroyo Grande, she received two campaign contributions, the only two campaign contributions, one from the IBEW and the other from LIUNA, the Laborers International, the only two groups that contributed to her campaign, which I understand was ultimately stopped when they canceled the election in Arroyo Grande. This is at least for voters and citizens in the region, the appearance of a conflict of interest. A group that is given a sole source contract, in this case, to provide labor on these projects, then makes campaign contributions to the person who has voted in favor of that. Now, unfortunately, the city of Grover Beach does not provide the same access to documents, in this case, the FPPC 460, that the city of Arroyo Grande does. So I don't know if Vice Chair Lee is subject to the same appearance of conflict of interest, but certainly if he has received contributions as a quid pro quo, or even in the appearance of a quid pro quo, I believe that he too would be disqualified and should recuse himself from any votes in any way dealing with future decisions on the CWTA and on this project as long as that PLA is in place. We hope, certainly my clients do, and on behalf of the voters in the region, we hope that you will be respectful of this and that you will resolve the appearance of the conflict of interest and recuse yourself from any votes in furtherance of this project. Thank you very much.
Hang on, Amy. Mr. Markison, could you please make sure that you stay around to the end of public comment, because I'm going to ask the district attorney to respond to what you said. Okay. And I think it'll be helpful. Okay. Go ahead, Amy.
Well, I was going to say, as I pointed out in my...
I want to be clear that your public comment is over. So we're going to move on to the next people. We do have other hands raised. I just wanted to let you know, with just making sure that you didn't leave the meeting, that there'll be some information for you. Okay. So Amy, next caller.
Our last speaker is Joseph Fitzer.
Hold on.
I'm sorry, Mr. Fitzer, we can hear you. Would you like to make a comment?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's not Joe Fitzer, it's Sean Perry. So that's why I didn't answer right away. I apologize. My name is Sean Perry, and I am with the IBW 639 of San Luis Obispo. I represent the largest pool of skilled electricians in San Luis Obispo County. I'm going to reiterate, I think, a lot of things that you guys already know about, but it bears repeating. The community workforce agreement is just simply a mechanism that allows projects to be built by the tradesmen and tradeswomen who live in this community. It does not discriminate. It doesn't refuse any company or corporation to not bid on this project. It allows that the company's leadership be on this project. And again, it only stipulates the local skilled community tradesmen be on this project. The wages paid are dictated by the state DIR, Department of Industrial Relations. All contractors, regardless if they're union contractors or open shop contractors, will pay that wage. One of the gentlemen talked about the dues that are being paid by the members. Those dues are not being paid by taxpayer dollars. They're paid by each of those individuals for representation in the union. We know that this project is going to be supplied with state indentured apprentices that are being trained locally from the area. We also know the obvious, that the tax dollars stay here in the community. And it's for these reasons I am very grateful for the CWA, and I commend you for supporting this. I just wanted to be here tonight to let you know that I think you're doing the right thing. So thank you very much.
Our last speaker is David Baldwin.
Hi, good evening. My name is David Baldwin. I'm a representative of the Plumbers and Steam Fitters Local 403 for San Luis Obispo County. I also wanted to just congratulate the district on this important agreement. You know, one of the important things to recognize, and I'm sure all of you know because you went through the agreement at the time you entered into it, but these agreements are non-discriminatory agreements. And both union and non-union contractors are free to bid and work on the project, as well as union and non-union workers are free to be dispatched to the project. So I just wanted to put that out there. And I do want to commend you as well. One of the things these agreements do is they create a pathway for our local young folks to apprenticeship. And this is so important. Because that is the pathway to these what they often call middle wage jobs, where the overall health of working communities like Arroyo Grande and like Grover Beach and like Oceano, where you've got a lot of working folks, these are the types of jobs that they need access to. And that brings up the overall health of your community by keeping that middle class strong. And keeping, and it's even better the way you're doing it, because you also do it with local workers. And we've created a way to try to make sure that not too many out of state or out of county workers are coming in and doing jobs that you have local folks right in your in your communities, your constituents that are skilled and ready to do that work. So I commend you on that. And you are at the forefront with a lot of other municipalities up and down the state who are successfully utilizing these agreements. And just up the street at the San Luis Obispo Wharf, I talked to a council member the other day who told me that they're actually approaching 80% local hire on that community workforce agreement. I mean, if that's not the proof in the pudding, nothing is. Those are huge numbers. And so good job. Go forward. I hope to see a lot of local folks working there. And thank you very much.
I believe that is the end of our public comment.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. So I will close public comment. And I want to take just a moment and ask Mr. Collins to address the conflict of interest issue and let him know what the board is doing at this point. So Mr. Collins?
And Madam Chair, if I can just correct one item before we have Mr. Collins, I just want to correct something that Mr. Markinson said, is that the city of Grover Beach does post its campaign financial documents and so forth on the website. So I just want to ensure him that we do that. The city of Grover Beach does that. So I just wanted to correct that before we have Mr. Collins indicate what the district is doing. So thank you for that indulgence.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. This is Keith Collins, General Counsel to the district. I have received and reviewed the email that was discussed earlier during public comment. The email itself alleges that there is an appearance of a conflict of interest. It does not allege that there is a conflict of interest currently or an actual conflict of interest as defined under various conflicts of interest laws. But campaign contributions are not considered a financial interest for purposes of the conflict of interest analysis. The decision before the board tonight does not impact or affect the financial interests of the board members or the campaign contributors, the donors. But out of an abundance of caution, the board has directed me to solicit an opinion from the Fair Political Practices Commission in order to solicit their advice and their opinion on whether or not there is a conflict of interest, just out of an abundance of caution. But I do not believe that there is a conflict based on the decision that is before the board tonight.
Thank you very much for that. And Mr. Markison, I just wanted to let you know that we did receive that, we did forward it, and we are taking appropriate action, again, in an abundance of caution. That is the dedication of this board. So we did hear you. So with that, we have closed public comment. We talked to Mr. Collins. So let's bring this back around to the board for consideration and possible motion. Any commentary to make?
None for me.
And I'm pulling up my
list, yeah.
No additional information for me. So if we're ready for a motion, I can go ahead and make a motion that we authorize the district administrator to execute a contract for CWA consulting services for the wastewater treatment plant redundancy project with Pacific Resource Services in accordance with the financial information provided in the recommendation.
And I'll second it.
Thank you for that. We have a motion and a second on the floor. Are there any points of discussion? Okay, can we get a roll call, please?
Chair Ray Russum?
Yes.
Vice Chair Lee?
Yes.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Motion carries.
And that takes us to item 6D. This is the award a contract for Digester 2 cleaning project to MP Environmental Services. And I'm not quite sure if we're going to District Administrator Gent or Mr. Jones. So whomever is the appropriate person, the floor is yours.
I'll take it from here. Michael Jones, Plant Superintendent. The item before your board today is to award a contract for the Digester Number 2 cleaning project to MP Environmental Services Incorporated. Staff's recommendation is to award a contract for the Digester Number 2 cleaning project to MP Environmental Services, Inc. in the amount of $142,000 $78 and authorize the district administrator to review and approve changes to the contract up to 15% of the initial amount or $21,312 for a total potential amount of $163,390. Some background on the project. The district operates two anaerobic digesters. Digester number one is the primary digester with a volume of 700,000 gallons, and digester number two is the secondary digester with a volume of 420,000 gallons. Raw sludge is pumped from the primary clarifier to digester number one, where it is heated and mixed. Supernatant from digester number one is then transferred to digester number two, where sludge settles in preparation for dewatering. Supernatant from digester number two then returns to the headworks for further processing through the treatment plant. Typically, digesters are cleaned every 8 to 12 years or sooner, depending on preliminary screening and grit removal systems. The district last cleaned digester number two in 2009-2010. Based on the cleaning of digester number one, completed in 2017, and the length of time between cleanings, it is expected that there will be significant buildup of debris in digester number two and therefore requires cleaning. In preparation and for the duration of the cleaning project, the district has been running the rental centrifuge daily to maintain operational needs. The daily operation of the rental centrifuge will result in higher energy costs, chemical costs, and biosolids hauling costs. The additional costs for energy, chemicals, and biosolids hauling have been included in the project budget as identified in Fund 26. Some discussion. On October 12, 2020, final cleaning plans and specifications for the digester number two cleaning project were completed. On October 16, 2020, the district advertised a notice inviting bids for this project. The notice was posted on the district's website, local newspaper, and ASAP repographics.com. The bid opening for the project was held on October 29, 2020 at 2 p.m. with one bid received in the amount of $142,078. The engineer's opinion of probable construction costs for this project was $178,000. That's attachment three. MP Environmental Services, Inc. posted the lowest qualified bid of $142,078, $142,078. I'm sorry, I've been saying that incorrect. That's attachment number two. The bid and all related documents were evaluated by the district's construction management team, Michael K. Nunley and Associates. After completing the review, MKN recommended the district award the digester number two cleaning project to MP Environmental Services Incorporated, attachment one. Staff concurs with this recommendation and that the bid meets all the district's requirements. In addition, staff is requesting board approval for a specific contingency for this project up to 15% or $21,312 of the total project amount for unforeseen future project events. The project is anticipated to take 1 month to complete from issuance of a notice to proceed. Some fiscal considerations. There's adequate budget. Adequate budget is included in the adopted budget for fiscal year 2020-21 under Fund 26, Account 26-8065, digester cleaning and coating. And with that, that concludes my staff report, and I'm able to answer any questions.
Thank you for that, Michael. Director Austin, any questions?
I don't have any questions.
Director Lee, any questions? Nor do I, because that was such a fantastic report. And thank you very much for meeting the anticipated costs there. And so let us check and see if there is anyone who wants to make public comment.
I see no attendees in public comment.
All right, then we will open and then shut public comment and bring it back to the board for consideration.
I'll make the motion that we award the contract for digester number two cleaning to MP Environmental Services in the amount of $142,078. Authorize the district administrator to review and approve changes to the contract up to 15% or $21,312 for a total potential amount of $163,390.
And I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second on the floor. Any discussion? Can we get a roll call, please?
Chair Ray Ressam?
Yes.
Vice Chair Lee?
Yes.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you, everyone. All right. I'm forwarding in my file here. Here we go. This takes us to item 6E. This is the award of contract for the cleaning and closed circuit television of the district's trunk sewer lines with Mainline Utility Company. So, Mr. Gent or Michael.
Yeah. At first, I just want to apologize. I understand the lighting keeps going in and out, and I think it's because my camera's pointing at the light. I'm in the lab, and I'm using my Surface, so it's kind of at an angle. So I just want to apologize for that.
All right.
You're good.
All right.
We can hear you just fine.
Okay. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the board. Michael Jones, plant superintendent. The item before you today is for an award, to award a contract for the cleaning and closed circuit television of the district's trunk sewer lines with Mainline Utility Company. Staff's recommendation is to award a contract for the cleaning and closed circuit television of the remainder of the district's trunk sewer lines to Mainline Utility Company in the amount of $87,011 and authorize the district administrator to review and approve changes to the contract for up to 10% of the initial amount or $8,701 for a total potential amount of $95,712. Some background and discussion on the project. The State Water Board issued general waste discharge requirements for the sanitary sewer systems water quality order 2006-0003-DWQ on May 2nd, 2006. This general order requires agencies to develop sanitary sewer system management plans and report all sanitary sewer overflows, among other requirements and prohibitions. The district's adopted sewer system management plan requires that the district clean and inspect the trunk sewer system a minimum of once every 10 years. During video inspection, if there are any problems observed, the capital improvement program must be updated to include repairs or replacements. If problems are minor, the annual budget can accommodate repairs. So for the district to maintain compliance with its discharge requirements and SSMP and evaluate the trunk sewer system, the district began the cleaning and closed circuit television of its trunk sewer system in July 2020. The district completed the flushing and CCTV of approximately 18,032 feet of trunk sewer main located in the city of Arroyo Grande. To continue our efforts, staff is requesting approval to award a contract to Mainline Utility Company for the cleaning and CCTV of the remaining 28,171 feet of district trunk sewer main located in the city of Grover Beach and the community of Oceano. Some fiscal consideration. I do have a correction to be made. We do have adequate budget, but it's not under Fund 26. That should be Fund 19, account number 19-8015, trunk sewer maintenance. And then with that concludes my report, and I'm able to answer any questions.
Thank you. Director Lee, any questions?
Just one quick question. Thank you, Michael, for that report. So as you said, we're going to videotape the lines, and then this will kind of forecast potential capital projects for next fiscal year or subsequent fiscal years. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. We actually just completed a project. I'll kind of touch base on that when I get to the plant operations report from our previous cleaning and CCTV from July. But I'll cover that in the plant operations report.
Okay, great. Yeah, because I know one of the things we were moving forward with is trying to do some trunk maintenance line while the redundancy is advancing. And so this is sounds like a perfect time to do this initial video. Thank you.
Director Austin, any questions?
I don't have any questions.
And I'm really, really trying hard to resist the temptation to tease Director Lee about calling it videotaping at this point. So with that, I can see that we have no one in the queue here. So I will go ahead and open public comment just to see if somebody happens to pop in. And I'll close public comment and bring it back around to the board for discussion and or consideration.
I'll go ahead and continue to acknowledge my ageism and recommend with the videotaping comment that I will make a recommendation that we award a contract for the cleaning and closed circuit television of the remainder of the district's trunk sewer lines to Mainline Utility Company in the amount of $87,011 and authorize the district administrator to review and approve change orders to the contract up to 10% for a total potential amount or award amount of $95,712.
I second it.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Can we get a roll call, please?
Chair Ray Russum?
Yes.
Vice Chair Lee?
Yes.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Motion carries.
All right, thank you. And item 6F, this is District Administrator and Plant Operations Report. So whomever would like to go first, the floor is yours.
I'll jump in and give Michael a break. So Jeremy Gent, District Administrator. And before you, we have the District Administrator and Plant Operations Report. The redundancy project, there's no update to give beyond the items that were before you earlier tonight, where we're moving forward with our preparations for sale of bonds. Central Coast Blue, there's been no involvement from the district from since the last reporting time, so I have no update to give on that. Some miscellaneous items. I talked a little bit earlier about we continue to be in our COVID-19 precautions, where we're doing regular temperature checks, increased PPE, and increased frequency of cleaning of the office. A couple other miscellaneous items. Last Thursday, the district became aware of an opportunity to participate in a Cal OES grant that's intended to mitigate the impacts of the PG&E PSPS, the public safety power shutdowns. These shutdowns are, as many of you are aware, are meant to offset the risk of wildfire during certain conditions. The portions of the grid will be completely shut down. And as part of the planning process for that, the district worked here regionally with the other community members in Five Cities Fire to develop some planning tools, what would happen if we did end up in a prolonged outage. And the goal was 7 days. That was the target for PG&E. That's their maximum recommended that they would put somebody under a shutdown. And as part of that, we identified a lack of fuel storage here at the site to sustain that 7 days of power generation if we were on our backup generator. And when we have 2 days, we have 48 hours of standby time. And so because of that, we were developing methods to bring fuel in, and we couldn't even expect to get the fuel regionally. So that was our plan after the initial notice of the PSPS. But when this grant opportunity came out, we had identified that need. So we had a short window of time. We only had about 6 days to prepare the grant application. And so we turned that around and got that in. And so what this does would enlarge our fuel storage here on site to be able to run for 7 continuous days during a power outage that would, protect the district and the coastline if we ended up in a prolonged PSPS. Now, that being said, we are a utility. We are a priority facility for PG&E. We are not as readily subject to these shutdowns as the regular public are. So not a huge risk. We have other contingencies. We worked with Lucia Marr School District to access their diesel fueling if this came to pass, and we weren't able to get fuel from a gas station regionally because their power was out too. So we've got contingencies in place. So I know I rambled about that, but I did want to give a more full update on that. The other update, the district is adding second monthly meetings in both November and December to facilitate the multiple board actions necessary to move the redundancy project into construction. So later this month, 2 weeks from tonight, Wednesday, November 18th, we will have a meeting at 6 p.m. via Zoom. And then Wednesday, December 2nd, the first Wednesday of the month, it also at 6 p.m. via Zoom. And then again on Wednesday, December 16th at 6 p.m. via Zoom. Other item, County Flood Control District is pursuing a restoration project that will provide reduced frequency of flooding along Arroyo Grande Creek and Meadow Creek Lagoon, which are two watersheds that are immediately adjacent to the facility. The project is in the preliminary stage of procuring the environmental and engineering team that they'll be able to undertake the multi-year project. I did sit in on the RFPs and grade the the consultants as part of the county's effort. And so they're moving forward with selection and hiring of that team. They're talking 4 years before they would even be applying for permits. So this is a long duration, environmentally sensitive project that is a long time, but the district would benefit from the reduced the flood mitigation portions of this project because we are low-lying here at the facility and subject to extreme storm events. Let's see, a couple other items. NBS, the district's billing consultant for the community of Oceano, has begun compiling information necessary to transition billing from of all districts' rates and charges to the county tax roll. So part of that effort is NBS is currently our billing consultant that works for the community of Oceano to put our rates and charges on the county's tax roll. And we are pursuing what is necessary to move the other two agencies to the tax roll as well. And so that effort is ongoing right now. And so NBS is looking at what that would take to complete. There are no plant tours to report because they're suspended due to COVID. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Jones, unless you would like to ask questions right now.
Any questions of the director?
No.
District administrator, I always give you that upgrade, don't I? All right, Michael.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the board. Michael Jones, plant superintendent, presenting the plant operations report. During this reporting period, October 1st through October 30th, the district did meet its NPDES permits as required. All of the district's numbers have been well within permit limitations. The plant's running very well right now. Some operations and maintenance tasks staff has completed as we replaced tires on two plant carts. Troubleshot high headworks wet well level due to influent pump number one check valve being stuck closed. Began cleaning out sludge bed center drain. Inspected manhole level floats. Checked and marked underground service alerts. Andrit service technician installed the new variable frequency drives, control screen, and programming controls for the district's centrifuge. Installed new sludge pump control switch for district centrifuge and rental centrifuge. Troubleshot high influent wet well alarm and fixed film reactor peripheral drive failure. West Coast Gauging performed annual maintenance on our flare and digester methane gas equipment. We repaired the laboratory autoclave. Petroleum Solutions performed the monthly maintenance on the rental centrifuge. AutoSys installed and programmed a replacement level sensor in our headworks. We replaced a failed sump pump in primary clarifier sump. Removed locks on manholes in preparation for failed liner removal. We adjusted and raised rental centrifuge auger and troubleshot mechanical bar screen washer compactor plugging. Some work orders that we completed, we greased the sludge bed centrifuge feed pumps, performed preventative maintenance and washed all plant carts, rinsed all disinfection control probes, performed a calibration on both disinfection backup systems, performed preventative maintenance on our Amiod filters, our forklift, our digester sludge recirculation pump, our digester vacuum pressure relief valves, our fixed film reactor pump and motors, fixed film reactor ventilation fans, loader, and then all clarifier drive units. Cleaned the effluent junction box. We test ran our emergency generator and emergency bypass pump and rinsed all surfaces of all our clarifiers. We cleaned our strainer baskets throughout the plant, changed out oil and cleaned orifices on our fixed film reactor. We replace desiccators in electrical control panels throughout the plant and performed a monthly safety walk. Some training that staff participated in was a laboratory refresher training and personal protective equipment and silica dust. There were no callouts this reporting period. And then moving on, this is the district trunk sewer line removal. As I was talking about earlier, during our efforts, we had started our CCTV and flushing of our trunk sewer main located in the city of Arroyo Grande. During the ongoing flushing and closed circuit television of the district's trunk sewer lines, the district became aware of a failing sewer liner in a portion of its trunk main. On Wednesday, October 28th, district operations staff, in concert with the city of Arroyo Grande,
Utilities Department and Mainline Utility performed the removal of a failed sewer liner in a portion of the district's trunk sewer main. The City of Arroyo Grande Utilities Department performed the successful removal of the failed liner by plugging the trunk main and using a sewer line root cutter nozzle. Mainline Utility verified the successful removal of the failed sewer liner by way of closed circuit television. Following the successful failed liner removal, the City of Arroyo Grande Utilities Department flushed the entire line and verified that there were no residual pieces of liner or debris in the sewer liner, or in the sewer line, excuse me. Below you'll find a before and after removal photo of the failed liner. So I'm not sure who's got the control right now. If we can scroll back up to the before picture, please. Thank you. So this is the before picture, and it just, if you take a look, if you look kind of further down, you can see that the liner is actually coming. It's actually constricting flow of the sewer main. And then, of course, with the rainy season coming, we wanted to just to make sure to get this knocked out. So thankfully, we contacted Shane Taylor over at the City of Arroyo Grande, and he was happy to assist us with trying to remove this. You know, we weren't 100% sure if this was going to work, but we definitely knew that we had to try something. And then just moving on to that next picture. So this is the before, and then this is the after. And you can see that failed liner is completely removed. And then on that next picture, this is just a setup prior to the removal of the liner. And you can kind of see the root cutter nozzle. And basically what it works off of hydraulics, essentially water pressure, and it rotates this cutter at about 1100 RPM. I think you'll be able to see it in the next picture. You can see the cutter on that right there moves at around 1100 RPM, just spins really fast, and it was able to take out that liner. You can see the residual liner kind of down in the sewer line right there. And yeah, we were able to remove all of that and end up with a clean line. And then in the next picture, it's just we got some of our staff, the district staff, along with the City of AG Utilities Division staff. So again, I just want to give a big thank you to the City of Arroyo Grande's Utilities Division and Mainline Utility for assisting the district and their continued dedication to public and environment. And with that, that concludes my plan operations report.
Thank you, Michael. And I love your pictures all the time. It makes me feel so connected to what you're doing, because it's one thing to hear it, but it's a whole other thing to see it. And yeah, maybe I'm just a visual learner, but it really does make me feel really good about what you're doing. And that's the difference was amazing. Any questions of Mr. Jones?
I don't have any questions. I just want to thank you for the great report and for the pictures also, because that really does show you exactly what's going on. So I really appreciate that. Thank you.
And I'll just echo those same comments.
There is an echo in the room, and it's very positive. Okay. Sorry, I am scrolling as we speak. So that is a receive and file, of course. So that takes us to board member communications. The only thing that I would like to mention is when Mr. Gent was explaining the upcoming meetings, and it feels like it's so much, it has really changed since this board came together a couple of years ago when that was the regular schedule. And now going back to that feels very different. And I just want to acknowledge the hard work of staff and how much we've changed the culture here and made it so much more efficient and helpful, so that when we do need to do this, it feels a whole lot different. So thank you to staff who has done what the board asked, and it's really changed how these meetings operate and feel. Any other board communications?
I just ditto that. Thank you.
And I'll just kind of continue the positive echo in the room, and then acknowledge the fact that we would have been changing locations had we been meeting in person. Part of my brain went, okay, where are we going to meet? Oh, we're going to meet on Zoom again. So we will see everyone's friendly faces in 2D once again.
Yep. Indeed. All right. So that's board communications. And we usually have in there staff communications. I didn't see it this time, but anything else for the good of the cause, Mr. Gent?
So no, we usually have miscellaneous items, but since I have a miscellaneous items on my administrator's report, it was always redundant. So we did remove that, but no additional statements from the administrator at this time. Thank you.
All right. Well, that takes us to adjournment, and I'm very excited to see the bids coming in this week. So I can't wait to hear about that. This is an exciting time for the district. And so we will see you all in 2 weeks. Thank you, everyone.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night, everyone.